The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
John Gibbons is with us for a weekly Last Word of the Environment. On the week trending last Friday, we discussed the Singapore Air incident in which a man died, but many other people were very seriously injured, possible skull fractures and also perhaps paralysis as a result of hitting the ceiling of the aircraft. And then over the weekend, after that, we had a flight between Ireland and Dubai in which a dozen people were injured, including six of the staff who were wandering around. You're putting this down to climate change.
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I guess, first of all, it's important to say I don't think there's any bandwagon jumping here. So the reason I say that is there was a study published in June of last year in a British journal. And what it established basically is that severe turbulence has already increased by about 55% over the North Atlantic routes between 1979 and 2020. So basically, they've identified that this is happening already. Important to say that because this study was published over a year ago. So they're basically, what we've seen in recent days matches the projections.
Yeah, but that's the North Atlantic route. What's happened has been in Asia mainly, are coming back from the Middle East.
Yeah, absolutely. They said the largest increases in turbulence, Matt, were in the North Atlantic route. They've also seen increases in Europe, the Middle East and the South Atlantic. So basically this increase in turbulence is a global effect.
But see, what really worried me was stuff that I was reading about in relation to this. And I think, as I said on Friday, as somebody who I knew who has since died, but he was on an aircraft in Asia about 30 years ago when this actually happened, and the person sitting beside him didn't have his seatbelt on, went up, hit the roof and was killed.
Oh dear.
He watched this man being killed beside him, and every time he got on a flight, he literally strapped himself in. And I would do, but you end up walking to the toilets, or you'd go to stretch your legs, particularly on a long flight. And what was really frightening about this is that normally you're told there's turbulence coming, fasten your seatbelt, the light goes on, they shut down the trolley service or whatever. But apparently now, a lot of the time, it's actually invisible to the equipment on the aircraft. They hit turbulence before they even know they're going to.
That's right. There's three main types of turbulence. One is the turbulence associated with thunderstorms and other storms, which again, pilots would be able to identify on the radar. The second type of turbulence that often happens is close to mountain ranges. And this is where air is displaced and you get a sudden change in pressure. Now, again, pilots would be alert to that. So, for example, if you're flying over the Alps, you'd be well aware that you're in for unstable air as different air masses move around. So pilots, again, would be aware of that. Also, by the way, Matt, they regularly steer around turbulence, right? So they will identify a turbulent patch of air ahead, and they might take a 100-kilometre diversion around that, or a 500-kilometre, whatever. Now, the difference here, this newer phenomenon is called clear air turbulence. And this is, as the name suggests, a pilot is flying along in what to the naked eye and to his instruments looks like a perfectly normal thing, and then bang, suddenly the plane drops maybe 50, maybe 100, maybe 500 metres in a matter of seconds. Now, what's driving this basically is it's called what are called a vertical wind shear events, and this is where two air masses overlap and move at different speeds. So think of it like almost like a fault line in a
It's an earthquake.
Yeah, thank you. It's an earthquake. So it's basically you've got two pressure zones colliding. And essentially what's happening is that we're seeing this particularly around the jet stream. And of course, we know that the jet stream occurs, as the name suggests, at about 7 miles, 10, 11 kilometers up. And that is, of course, the air mass that typically aviation crosses, for example, in the Northern Hemisphere, crosses the Atlantic back and forth using the jet stream. And what we're seeing basically, again, pumped up by climate change, are more dramatic clashes of air masses, leading to this clear air turbulence and leading to the kind of really dangerous scenarios that you described. So in a way of thinking about this is that, you know, aviation and the emissions from aviation are making turbulence worse, but turbulence in turn is making aviation and the experience of aviation worse. And I think something that's going to come out of this increasingly is that passengers are going to have to wear their seatbelts throughout journeys. Now, in one of the recent incidents, the main people injured were in fact the cabin crew, because of course they don't have that opportunity. But the issue here, and of course it is important to say that pilots and co-pilots and engineers always wear their seatbelts throughout the flights, because they're well used to this phenomenon. But what we're basically saying here, Matt, is that we can expect more clear air turbulence. It's very dangerous. If you're going on an airplane, leave your seatbelt on. If you're going to the loo or whatever, do it quickly, get back to your seat, put your seatbelt back on. People are going to get killed as a result of this.
Of course, it's also worrying, I'd imagine, for the cabin crew who actually have to go pushing the trolleys around the plane all the time.
This is the issue. And again, whether that leads to a curtailment of that type of service will remains to be seen. But, I mean, it is obviously a safety issue for crew, because I suppose it is one of the wonders of the age, really, that since the jet age, aviation per million kilometres is an incredibly safe form of transport. It causes other problems that we've discussed many times. But in terms, it is very, very safe. So this clear air turbulence is one of the things that is making aviation less safe and, of course, a lot more unpleasant.
Can I tell you from some of the messages coming into 0874 100 102, people don't want to believe this.
Sure. I mean, whether or not you believe this, do yourself a favour. Put your seatbelt on anyway, because science doesn't really care whether or not you believe in it.
Okay, one last one. So is it dangerous to the structure of the plane?
Yeah, interestingly, turbulence generally is one of those things that costs the aviation industry globally hundreds of millions of euros a year in structural stresses to planes, because planes get banged around, as you can expect. In fact, if you're on a plane and you're going through turbulence and you look out the window, you can actually see the wings spinning or bending and shearing around. So yeah, I mean, planes are made of metal. They've got all sorts of bits holding them together, wires and so on. They're designed to cope with a lot of stress. But after a plane has been rightly banged around in turbulence, it often requires a fair amount of groundwork and repairs to make sure, for example, that sensitive wiring and structural faults haven't been detected. But I will say this, planes are very well maintained, and that's why, happily, they very rarely fall from the sky.
Okay, I need to take a break. We'll come back with more from John Gibbons after we take this break.
Today FM's travel update with GetSetGo.ie. Game-changing online car, home and travel insurance that's faster, better and easier.
There's a crash in Dublin on the N7 outbound before Junction 3 City West, causing a delay from Junction 1A Newlands Cross. The inbound side is slow too, but an accident at Junction 1A Newlands Cross is gone. There's much slower traffic on either side of the M50, but any incidents there are gone. While the North Circular Road westbound, Navan Road outbound and Castle Knock Road are heavier than usual because of bloom. In Limerick, Childers Road westbound is slow between Clohan GA and the M7 Link Road, while Waterford's Outer Ring Road is solid westbound between the hospital and Farnshanine roundabout. Mark Hogan, Today FM Travel.
The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper
and Life Pharmacy. You're a local pharmacy that is always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together. Today FM.
The Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show.
Only wanna wake up with you. I'm ready now.
Gift Grub. The gift that keeps on giving. Every morning exclusively on Today FM.
RT Registry of Interest Hotline. Una speaking.
Hi Una. Marty Morris here.
Oh, Marty.
I'm here outside Cusick Park in Ennis, where a very bubbly lady has offered me a lick of her ice cream.
There's no issue with a lick of a Magnum, Marty.
Well, just to be safe, I'd like to declare 6 licks already. That's about 93 cents, Una.
Just carry on licking, Marty. There's no problem with that at all.
The Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show.
With Dacia.
Weekdays from 6 a.m. on Today FM.
June 7th is polling day. On that day, you'll be asked to vote in the European elections, the local elections, and, if you're registered in Limerick, in the election of Limerick's new mayor. You'll find the information you need on all the votes taking place at electoralcommission.ie. Your vote is your voice, so don't let others speak for you. Be a voter on June 7th. From An Coimisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's independent electoral commission.
Find a Volkswagen commercial vehicle that can keep up with your business. Like our Caddy, Transporter, Crafter, Amarok and the all-electric ID Buzz Cargo. With finance from 0%, purchase contributions of up to €2,000 and service plans from €12.99 per month, it's time to purchase a commercial vehicle that works as hard as you. Book your test drive now at your local Volkswagen commercial vehicles dealer or visit VolkswagenVans.ie. Here's to the Volkswagen in you.
Terms and conditions apply. Finance provided by... by way of hire purchase agreement from Volkswagen Financial Services Ireland and subject to lending criteria. Volkswagen Financial Services Ireland Limited is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Visit volkswagenvans.ie for further information.
This weekend in the Sunday Times, we take a look at the best places to stay across Ireland. Whether you want to escape with the family, a luxury break, or a gastronomic getaway, our comprehensive guide will help you to find the perfect accommodation for this year's staycation. Pick up the Sunday Times or subscribe at thesundaytimes.ie.
As we spring into summer, some things are just guaranteed. Like farmers' tans, they're everywhere. And the great barbecue debate, is gas ever better than charcoal? No. Another guarantee, and only in Ireland, is that One Euro Dreams player will win 2,000 euro every month for the next 5 years. Guaranteed. That's 2,000 euro a month for 5 years. But only if you play Euro Dreams on Thursday, May 30th. The National Lottery. It could be you. Play responsibly. Play for fun.
Escape to summer bliss at the Heritage, just 1 hour from Dublin. Relax at the award-winning Espa Spa. Dine at Blake's Restaurant. Enjoy cocktails on the terrace and tee off on the 18-hole golf course. Perfect for a romantic retreat, girly getaway, or just get the gang together in County Laois. Book your ideal summer escape at theheritage.com.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM. It all happens here.
Sue says, I'm so sick of hearing people refer to occupations that are gender neutral, such as a pilot with a male gender term. This is happening now in this interview and is happening so frequently every single day by presenters and by interviewees. Please address this. And we have another listener who says, get that gobshite off and stop frightening people. That must be you, John, rather than me.
I'm not sure about it.
Okay. And Orla says, I had a horrendous flight to Marseille a few years ago. Beautiful sun outside, no turbulence until landing, and the plane suddenly dropped 10 metres with the oxygen mask dropping, but it must be more than 10 metres. I was terrified and thankfully unhurt because I had my seatbelt on. I keep it on from now on always. Okay. Earlier in the programme, we were talking about the National Children's Hospital. Just bear with me, John, you'll see where I'm going with this, which has been a disaster when it comes to building it, and it's overpriced and taking way too long. And we don't build the hospitals as quickly as we should. We don't build anything to budget or on time in this country, and we don't build our wind farms, and we fail to put the wind farms into the Irish Sea. So when I see a report that Irish consumers are going to be able to avail of cheaper zero carbon gas generated from grass and organic wastes to replace imported fossil gas, I'm not sure I believe it, because I'm not sure that the government is going to achieve the wide-scale development of anaerobic digesters to generate these large volumes of biomethane in Irish farms, as is promising. Great idea. It's not going to happen, though, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it is a fascinating idea. And maybe we should explain briefly what an anaerobic digester would look like and how it would work. Basically, the idea is that there'd be about 200 of these located around the country. So if you take 26 counties, Matt, that's probably an average of about maybe 9 per county, obviously more in the bigger farming counties. And the idea basically is that these would be located presumably in sort of centralised areas in rural Ireland, if that makes sense. And they would operate by mulching a combination.
Sorry. I've no idea what that is. I'm after sending something off on my computer, looking for directions somewhere. Apologies for that.
No problem at all. So basically, what it does is it combines grass and also animal waste. Exactly. They're combined, and sometimes also food waste. And the idea basically is that you percolate all this lot up and you generate biomethane from it. So this is basically your so-called biogas. Now, it sounds great. And you say, brilliant, we'll use this substance. Now, the interesting thing is, what is the objective here? Now, this week I've been hearing about savings for consumers, and I'm afraid I share your scepticism. Now, back in September 2022, Matt, when this was originally being floated, there was a completely different set of objectives. The Department of Agriculture, in a briefing document on this, said the purpose of this is to get farmers to diversify away from livestock. And they were looking for a reduction in the livestock numbers in Ireland of about 400,000. So the idea is that instead of growing grass and feeding it to cattle in particular, that you grow grass and it's grass to gas. So that is the purpose of this exercise. So the real savings here, and I think it's been sort of, there's been some kind of bait and switch has happened this year where suddenly it's, or this week, where suddenly it's a consumer issue. The purpose of this exercise is to wean, to give farmers an opportunity to have an income doing the thing that many farmers in Ireland do very well, which is growing grass. At the moment, that grass is being fed to cattle and to sheep, and they in turn, as ruminants, are turning it into methane that's being released into the wild. If you take the same grass, put it into a biodigester, combine it with animal waste, then the idea is that you then you create biogas. But I'm super skeptical because, first of all, these facilities, right, 200 of them, Matt, across Ireland, across rural Ireland, they have to be run to an incredibly high standard. If you get more than about 1% or 2% leakage from a biomethane facility, it then becomes worse from a climate point of view than a coal-fired plant. That's the first thing. So the question is, who exactly is going to run 200 facilities scattered around rural Ireland to the high precision level required? And also, if a biomethane gas plant starts leaking, right, who's going to detect that? What systems are put in place? This stuff is really complex. It's really high-end engineering. And I'm personally super skeptical that you can build small anaerobic digester plants and run them to really high industrial standards. But having said that, the purpose here really, whether they're saying it or not, is to give farmers something else to do with grass.
Okay, because something else we discussed earlier in the week without you on the programme was the latest Environmental Protection Agency assessment of how we're meeting our climate change targets. And we're not going to. We're going to get a fine of anywhere between 3 and 8 billion euro, it seems, at the end of the decade for missing our legally binding target of 51% emission reduction by 2030. The rate we're going at, we're going to get to, what is it, 29%?
Well, that 29%, by the way, it isn't a medium.
It isn't nothing, is
no.
it?
Oh, I mean, if we were to achieve 29%, if you said to me now, right this minute, John, how would you take 29% by 2030? I'd snap your hand off for it, Matt. Because, in fact, these are all about ranges. In agriculture, for example, we have a range, I think, is between 1 and 18%. Between 1 and 18%. So you only get to 18% if 100% of all the measures and all the additional measures are implemented and are fully successful. So when you look at ranges like that, you need to look at the lower end of those ranges. So my point in saying that is the 29% that the EPA are saying, that is a best case scenario. That includes full implementation of a range of policies and plans for which there is no budget and no pathway today. And the issue really with these projections, I mean, we know, for example, we heard the same thing this time last year, the 29%. So you might say, what's changed? What has changed is another year has gone by and we've made almost no progress towards it. So the likelihood, maybe 12 months ago, the likelihood of us achieving a composite 29% was higher than it is today.
Something I referred to yesterday was Gary Murphy when he was on with us talking about the European Parliament elections, and I was making the point, there's a very good series in the Business Post by Daniel Murray at present about all the major issues across Europe, some of which we're not bothered with here in Ireland, we're focusing more on it. But the one thing that is in common seems to be something of a kickback against the Green Deal, that this idea of a massive investment in decarbonising Europe seems to be becoming politically unpopular. And I'd ask you not to make any reference to what happened in the Irish elections because we're bound under broadcasting rules. But looking at what's happening across continental Europe, it does look like the environmentally progressive parties could struggle in the forthcoming European elections.
I would agree with that analysis. It seems to be the case right across Europe. They're struggling. And I think there's no question. We've talked about this before. You have this thing called action followed by reaction. So maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you had the climate movement, Greta Thunberg, people on the streets, etc., etc. And what always happens in these situations is that action provokes an equal and opposite reaction.
Sometimes funded by dark sources, because there's plenty of evidence that showed how that happened in the United States and the like of the big coal producers like the Koch brothers been behind all of these public action committees funding misinformation to try and undermine climate change. Sure. Try to undermine the measures to deal with global warming and climate change.
Yeah, and some of this, Matt, isn't subtle at all. For example, the pesticides industry, in Europe, which is, it's a vast, globally, it's a gigantic industry, and it's big here in Europe and particularly strong in Germany. The pesticides industry has been pouring lobbying money into overturning the 2030 regulations or efforts, the so-called farm-to-fork efforts that were designed to reduce pesticide use and the load, the pesticide load, which of course is causing a biodiversity crisis right across Europe. But guess what? The pesticide industry doesn't see it that way. The way it sees it is the more pesticides that are sold, and globally, by the way, 3 million tons of these highly toxic chemicals, many of novel entities that we don't even know what's in them, because guess what? The industry don't have to tell us. And that industry is fighting tooth and nail to make sure that EU regulations bringing their industry into line from an environmental point of view are killed at birth. So a lot of this is very unsubtle. And they've also, of course, not just the pesticide industry, but many other large industrial, agri-industrial and other industrial forces are pouring money into any group, including groups of the, shall we say, well to the right, who are presenting political agitation. And we know, for example, Matt, that quite a lot of the movements, for example, the farmer movements, the quite violent farmer protests, these were in many cases being, shall we say, engineered to some extent.
One listener says, why is it the green agenda is struggling? Easy, it's the cost of living. The green agenda is expensive and only affordable by the wealthy. Ordinary people can't afford a bandwagon.
Yeah, again, that's a very, very glib analysis.
It may have a degree of truth to it, because the cost of living is a major issue for very many people at the moment, and they fear that their cost of living is going to be increased by having to follow climate change measures.
Yeah, I think, you know, for example, we're seeing at the same time, Matt, record numbers of SUVs being sold right across Ireland and across Europe.
Yeah, that goes to the point about the wealthy. It's only the wealthy can afford the SUVs.
Well, the point really is that the people who are fighting, for example, against these regulations often tend to be people who are perfectly well-heeled to start with. And what they're trying to do, it's not that they necessarily can't afford it. What they're trying to do, basically, is to protect their privilege and to make sure that somebody else pays the climate change measures. And the thing you find is, you know what, always flows downhill. And the people at the bottom of the hill in the climate crisis are the world's poor. The poor in the third world today, and the poor and the rest of us in the first world tomorrow.
Okay, one final thing talking about, well, India is one of the richest countries in the world, although it has this vast gaps between the very wealthy and absolute and utter poverty. But tell us about the heat, how it's hit in India in recent times.
Yeah, India, first of all, as we know, the Indian subcontinent is prone to extreme temperatures. This is not new. What is new is we're seeing the 50 degree centigrade threshold being breached on a almost a regular basis now, and this is approaching to the very edge of human survivability. And critically, Matt, with temperature is one thing, but the thing that kills people in large numbers is what's called wet bulb temperatures. That means when you have a 100% humidity combined with high temperatures, those combinations at about 28 degrees centigrade of what's called wet bulb temperature to 30 degrees, people start to die. In fact, unless you have access to air conditioning, those temperatures for more than 6 hours will kill a healthy adult sitting in the shade drinking water.
John Gibbons, thank you for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.